Good morning. We will call the Subcommittee on the Metropolitan Council Accountability and Transparency to order. And I guess we have a quorum. So I wonder if somebody would please move the minutes from the last meeting.
So moved.
And is there a second?
Second.
All in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 And the same, nays, the same? Okay. Meeting the minutes are approved. Thank you. All right. Today we're gonna start off with a bit. It's a report that's been around for a while. The Office of Legislative Auditors report from 2011 on governance, transit governance in the Twin Cities region, and we're talking about the Met Council particularly. So transit governance and. I believe we're just waiting. I don't know that we're waiting for Mr. Nobles. So we have Judy Randall from the OLA's office. And everyone got a copy of the report. So it's something really worth reading. And Chapter 2 is the most essential area. And it is the chapter that hasn't changed, you know, since 2011. I think the facts and the analysis is still pertinent and current. So, but just a little bit of a preface. I think that governance issues are big around here. Who's in charge? Who's making the decisions? Where's the accountability lines? The responsibility? Does that line up with the accountability and so on? So, governance is really, really critical that it be right. And I think in agencies where it isn't right, you do have issues. And I think the legislative auditor did bring this out, again, 4 years ago. This may be the group that dusted off for you. But I do want to just sort of issue an invitation to folks on the subcommittee. There are going to be a lot of good ideas and solutions that are coming forth, and hopefully you'll take the opportunity to get things in. Your ideas that you see as being very valid, put them before the committee. But we want to be able to hear the good ideas and at least inform people. So at any rate, Judy Randall, why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself for the record. And thanks for being here.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. For the record, my name is Judy Randall. I'm an evaluation manager with the Office of the Legislative Auditor. I'm going to express condolences from Jim Nobles. It's a busy time, and I think he is at a closing conference on another evaluation right now. So hopefully he'll be able to pop in later. I'm happy to be here to talk with you about our evaluation on governance of transit in the Twin Cities region. As the Chair said, we did release this report in 2011. The report looked at, kind of transit services generally in the Twin Cities area. Oh, and there's Mr. Nobles, just after I expressed his condolences. Come up and join me. Our report looked at transit services in the region, and of course it was all types of transit services, including regular route bus service, it's express and local, light rail transit, commuter rail transit, and bus rapid transit. In the report, we do talk about performance of these different transit services, but for today, I'm going to focus on the governance issues and the governance structure of transit. Our main finding really was that the region's transit governance structure is far from ideal, and the way we found to best show you this was simply just to lay out all the different organizations that are involved in transit governance in the region. So first, we have the Metropolitan Council. Within the Met Council are two divisions that handle transit, Metro Transit, which is the operating arm of transit, and then Metropolitan Transportation Services, which handles some operation aspects, but then also is kind of the transit planning branch within the Met Council. The state law has identified the Metropolitan Council as the region's Metropolitan Planning Organization, the MPO. Federal law requires metropolitan areas of a certain size to have a metropolitan planning organization. Federal law also requires the region's MPO to have some elected representation. As you know, the Met Council, the members there are all appointed, so there's not elected representation. So to meet the federal requirements of an MPO, state law requires Met Council to have this advisory board, which is the Transportation Advisory Board, which is made up of 33 members, some of whom are elected, some of whom are appointed. So together, the TAB and the Met Council serve as the region's MPO to work on short and long-term planning for transit. In addition to these kind of regional entities, We have the county regional railroad authorities in the metropolitan region. So there are seven of those, one for each county in the metropolitan region. And they have authority and jurisdiction to help develop rail transit. The regional railroad authorities also have the ability to levy taxes related to rail transit. Of course, we also have the county boards in the region, and they also have authority and responsibility to help develop transit lines. And then in 2008, the legislature authorized the county's transit improvement board. Through this, the legislature authorized the seven counties in the Twin Cities region to levy a quarter-cent sales tax for transit purposes. Five of the counties, Washington, Anoka, Ramsey, Hennepin, and Dakota, chose to levy this tax, and they have voting representation on CTIB, County's Transit Improvement Board. Carver and Scott County have not chosen to levy the tax, so they are non-voting members on CTIB. So you can see we've got the regional entities, and we've got a lot of county entities that have responsibility for transit. And then at the time we did the report, there were six suburban transit providers. And these are communities that kind of opted out of the Metro Transit system and instead provide transit services in their own communities. One of the recommendations we made in 2011 was for some consolidation among these suburban transit providers. And in fact, just this January, my understanding is that Shakopee Transit and Prior Lake Transit kind of merged in with the Minnesota Valley Transit Authority. So now MVTA, Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, is providing transit services in Shakopee and Prior Lake as well. And while Plymouth Metrolink still has its own transit services, the administrative aspects of those services are handled by Southwest Transit. So whereas before we had six suburban transit providers, in addition to these county entities and in addition to Met Council and TAB, now we really have three primary transit suburban transit providers.
So Ms. Randall, before, oh, I'm sorry.
No, you're good.
All right, so you did say that the Metropolitan Transportation Services, MTS, is a planning organization. Because I don't understand, are they an entity on their own within Met Council? And why are they a separate entity, I guess? But aren't the regional rail authorities then also planning? And is planning across all these entities? Ms. Randall?
Madam Chair, thanks for the question. Metro Transit and Metropolitan Transportation Services are divisions within Met Council. And Metropolitan Transportation Services takes on a regional planning approach. They develop the transportation, the TPP, and I'm looking at Ms. McCarthy in the audience there, who is here to represent MTS. Metropolitan Transportation Services develops the TPP, the Transportation Policy Plan. I'm getting nods, which is the long-term planning plan. Sorry, I know that's not good language, but it's the long-term plan for transportation and transit in the region, and it's part of a federal planning requirements. The Transportation Advisory Board, the TAB, develops the TIP, the Transportation Improvement Plan, which is a short-term policy planning. So the TAB develops the list for kind of a four-year time frame for projects that are prioritized for federal funding. And the Metropolitan Transportation Services develops a longer-range plan to help develop transit in the region.
Great. All right, thanks. Okay.
And I would just add, Madam Chair, that the counties are really focused on transit, you know, within their county borders. And the Metropolitan Council and the Metropolitan Transportation Services is more across county borders, taking that regional approach. Mm-hmm. So just to kind of finish up with the different organizations that are in transit governance in the region, you also have all of these different commissions, task force, alliances that are really focused on developing transit within one corridor. So, you know, you've got, again, Met Council and TAB taking more of a regional approach, counties looking at it from the county perspective, and then you've got the suburban transit providers focused on transit services in their communities, and then these corridors and commissions that are focused on specific corridors, transit for specific corridors. So there's a lot of organizations involved. They have really distinct responsibilities, but they're all also overlapping responsibilities, which I think, Madam Chair, you're picking up on. And, you know, when we first put this slide together 4 years ago, you know, I wanted to put lines in to show hierarchy, and it was impossible. So there's some challenges due to the governance structure. First is the fragmentation and complexity, which I think is evident from that previous slide. Complexity in of itself isn't necessarily a bad thing if everybody works well together. But what we found at the time, in 2011, was that there was significant distrust among some of the transit organizations, which really made the working together and coordination more difficult. Also, because there are so many different organizations that, again, have unique but overlapping responsibilities, there was a lot of coordination that was required. We also found that the composition of the Metropolitan Council itself contributed to the challenges we were seeing in the governance of transit. As you know, members of the Met Council are appointed by the governor. As a result, they have limited accountability to the public. They respond to the governor alone and not to the public. And as we did our work on the evaluation, so we went kind of talking to all the different stakeholders and the different transit organizations, we found that there was limited credibility with stakeholders. The Met Council did not have as much credibility as perhaps it should for a regional planning organization. Also, the Met Council had limited stability. All members are appointed by the governor, serve at the pleasure of the governor, and when there's a new governor, then the entire council can be reconstituted. We also think that the composition of the council itself contributed to a large number of the transit organizations in the region. Because there was this limited accountability and limited credibility, the legislature created an authorized CTIP so that the counties could levy taxes, generate their own revenue, and then have more control over the expenditure of that money. So really the key recommendation of our evaluation was that the legislature should restructure the Metropolitan Council. In the report, and I believe you have pages 40 through 49 maybe in front of you, which are the key pages in the report that talk about these different options, we set forth four different options and discuss the pros and cons. And I'll go through that briefly here today too. But just to list the four options in addition to the status quo that we go through, the first is to maintain appointed members but have staggered terms so that the whole council doesn't turn over all at the same time. The second option is to have staggered terms, but to have a mix of appointed and elected members. The third option, you can see a theme here, we're fans of staggered terms. Staggered terms, but then having the county commissioners serve as council members. And finally, to have the members elected directly by the public. So I'll just run through each of those options and the pros and cons quickly. The first one is staggered terms of appointed members. On the pro side of this option, we found that among the options, it was one of the ones that was more politically feasible. It would also provide stability for the council and therefore allow the council to develop its own strategic vision, its own set of priorities that could be maintained from council to council. And it would preserve a regional perspective. Members would be appointed to represent kind of the region as a whole. On the con side of this option, you know, we think there's still low accountability to the public and therefore low credibility with stakeholders. Maintaining the appointed members means that you can't really reduce the number of transit organizations out there. You still need all of these organizations representing all these different interests. So you don't really have an opportunity to make coordination any easier. The second option is, again, staggered terms, but now with a mix of appointed and elected members. Again, this was, you know, on the spectrum, we found this one to still be more politically feasible than some others, but now you've got increased accountability to the public and some increased credibility with stakeholders. Again, because of the staggered terms, I think the council has more stability, and therefore the council could develop its own regional priorities, and now you've got a mix of some regional and local perspectives. On the con side, we still may have a lot of transit organizations, and so coordination may still be required. Also, for members who are elected, you know, they are also holding other public duties, so they're going to have an increased workload, so that would have to be balanced. And devil's in the details here in terms of the voting weights and how representation would be determined. Option three is staggered terms, but now county commissioners are members. Again, you've got the increased accountability and credibility and stability, and the council, you know, maintains its ability to develop its own regional priorities. With this option, there may be an opportunity to reduce the number of transit organizations in place, and therefore may reduce the need for as much coordination. On the con side, this one is politically more difficult. We've kind of now crossed over on the spectrum to things that are maybe harder to implement. The members may have less of a regional perspective and now may take more of a parochial or local perspective. Again, you've got the workload for elected officials and figuring out the voting weights and representation. The fourth option, having members directly elected, again, high accountability, credibility, really the ability for the council to develop its own priorities, likely could reduce the number of transit organizations that are in place, which would then lead to less need for coordination. On the con side, we viewed this one as probably the most difficult politically, decisions more likely influenced by parochial stuff, and then having to figure out, again, the voting weights.
Yes, Ms. Randall, on the voting weights issue, mm-hmm. could you describe now how the voting weights are set up for CTIB, I presume, and I guess that would be it, CTIB?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. CTIB has a... And I'm gonna have to refer to my report to get the details. I know that they have a system where it's based in part on how much revenue is raised, and then also based on population that's represented. So they have kind of a complicated voting weight scheme. I'm not sure there's anyone here from CTIB that can answer that better, but I can look for more information in the report as well.
Great, that would be good. Thank you.
Sure. Madam Chair, just to finish up the presentation then, our recommendation in the report is option number 2, which is the mix of appointed and elected members that serve staggered terms. We think this would improve accountability, credibility, and stability, and it could lead to more streamlined governance. You know, if you have elected membership on Met Council, you may be able to eliminate the Transportation Advisory Board, the TAB, and then depending on who those elected members are, depending on how much county representation is in place on the Met Council, that may lead to additional streamlining of the organizations involved in transit. So with that, I'll end the formal part and happy to take questions. Thank you.
Any questions, members? And will you be going into, Ms. Randall, discussion then of the funding and how each entity is funded and the decisions that they're making?
Right now, Madam Chair?
Today?
I was not planning on it.
I see.
But
okay.
We can do that. I know that there's some Met Council folks here who may be able to provide more information on their entities.
Well, I do think it would be, yes, Representative Halverson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and I didn't mean to interrupt you, so if you wanted to finish your thought, you can.
Why don't you go ahead.
Okay. I wanted to just back up a little bit in the presentation and confirm, first of all, is this report from 2011 you mentioned? Okay. Thank you. And, Madam Chair, I also am curious. It sounds like one of the goals in your recommendation is to change the structure of the way that our suburban transit and groups operate. Have other than the need for high levels of coordination, what other benefits would that have, and what benefits have we seen from having those decisions really bubble up from the local level? It feels to me that our suburban transit authority that serves Eagan and now serves Shakopee and Prior Lake and other communities really is focused on local decision making and hearing where we need to be running routes locally. I've seen changes made based on conversations I've had with community members. So how does that balance out if we make it more regional as opposed to less local or more local?
Madam Chair and
Ms.
Representative, what we recommended in the evaluation was not to eliminate the suburban transit providers. But simply, we saw some opportunities for efficiencies with, in particular, Prior Lake Transit and Shakopee Transit. They were small transit organizations that could be served by Minnesota Valley Transit Authority, and that's, in fact, what happened in January. So in the report, we specifically say we don't see a reason to move away from those suburban transit providers, but there may be, again, some of these are smaller, and maybe we can find some efficiencies. And I know in Plymouth, for the Plymouth Metrolink, I actually was speaking with the person who used to be in charge of their transit operations, and she said, you know, now that Southwest is handling the administrative aspect of her transit thing, she's freed up to do other responsibilities for her city. In terms of getting that local input, I think you really hit the nail on the head in terms of when we went out and did this evaluation, we did not plan to have a report talking about the governance of Met Council. I mean, I went around saying, we are not going to do that. That's not what this evaluation is about. And every meeting I went to, literally, that was the thing people wanted to talk about. That was the issue, because they didn't feel that those local issues were being heard and addressed through the Met Council membership. And so we kind of couldn't, I was kind of dragged, I think, kicking and screaming, struggling to make this report and these types of recommendations, because that wasn't the initial intent. But again, I think there was a real desire for having, you know, some type of balance. I think of, you know, looking at the region as a whole. We're a region, and obviously transit lines are crossing boundaries, and so we need to think about that, but really making sure we're hearing the needs at the local level, because at the end of the day, it's, you know, somebody getting on a bus somewhere in their local community. So.
Representative Halverson? Okay, great, thank you. Ms. Randall, the decision-making jurisdiction, I guess, in terms of these different entities, I think is very interesting, and I just wonder if you can comment on that. I mean, I guess I thought that was in Chapter 2 as well, but what I see as a problem when you have an organization like CTIB, which is given statutory authority over basically light rail and park and rides, if I'm correct, and MTS, you know, thinks about contracted services and dial-a-ride, and the Met Council itself thinks about regular bus routes and metro. Well, anyway, so you've got. If you could talk about those lines of authority and responsibility, because it does seem that that's you know, then who is thinking about the region as a whole, and what are what's the better approach for the whole region?
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't know if members have their copies of the report in front of them. On page 14 in the report, we set forth transit governance responsibilities in the Twin Cities region by entity. And so we kind of identify who has authority for planning transit ways, who has responsibility for developing transit ways, for providing transit, generating money, allocating money, and then measuring performance. And I mean, if you don't have it, I can hold this. I'm not sure how well you can see it. But, you know, there's kind of different check marks across the way. And the only entity that has responsibility for all of those different aspects is the Metropolitan Transportation Services Division within the Met Council. Other than that, everybody has little pieces of it. You know, so planning transit ways, CTIBs involved, county boards, County Regional Railroad, Transit Corridor Commissions, TAP. So it's just this overlapping, I don't want to say mess, overlapping system where lots of different organizations have bits and pieces of responsibility.
Okay. Yes, Representative Fenton.
Thank you. Could you talk about, so all of this is surrounding transit, but did you ever discuss coordination between the transit authorities and MnDOT, specifically when they're looking at building, you know, the bus rapid transit, the light rail, the dedicated guideways? Is there coordination? Should there be coordination? What is that relationship in terms of planning like?
Ms. Randall.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative Fenton. We did look at MnDOT's role. In the Twin Cities region, the Met Council really has the most responsibility and authority for developing those, but I believe that MnDOT has representation on TAB and maybe some of the other planning organizations. So there is kind of a voice there. MnDOT does have a voice there. I think MnDOT is really more focused on building the roads and the bridges, and certainly working with the transit planning to make sure, you know, if we're going to be working on construction on a new road and we're thinking about doing BRT there, you know, designing that. I mean, if you look at I-35W stop, you know, between Minneapolis and 494 and how they reconfigured and had the BRT station at 46th Street. I don't know if you ever drive that way, if you know what I'm talking about. So there's certainly coordination between those entities. But Met Council and MTS in particular really takes the lead on the planning related to transit in the region.
Representative Fenton?
Well, so would you say that certain road improvements and studies get set aside in by MnDOT because the Met Council has authored studies on transit ways?
Ms. Randall.
Madam Chair, Representative Fenton, I don't know that I can answer that question.
Okay.
Sorry. I think you could ask, we can certainly ask that council representatives, and then it would be useful, I think, to have somebody from MnDOT here to talk about how they adjust their planning.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Randall, then, a couple of other questions. So, where how the money flows, I guess, would be of interest, too. So I picked up a page from, I think, last year's bonding bill, and it talked about allocating $20 million to the Transit Capital Improvement Fund. I don't know if it's a fund. Or from Transit Capital Improvement Program to, so it's going from the state to the regional rail authorities for development of various lines. And so I guess my thought would have been that the regional rail authorities are receiving all the funds they need from the, is it a local property tax, correct? I mean, if you could just clarify some of that movement of the money.
Sure. Madam Chair, the regional railroad authorities, you know, have the ability to levy tax, but certainly for regional planning, and the state helps support the regional planning and development as well. You know, I will just remind you, and I'm sorry, that the report is 4 years old, and so in terms of more recent funding and expenditures, I don't have updated information right now on that. We can certainly look into that and get you more information and get the committee more information. But I'm worried that our numbers are outdated at this point, honestly.
Sure. And Ms. Randall, I was really not interested in the actual numbers per se, but in the, you know, how the dollars flow from one entity to another. I mean, for example, CTIB for light rail transit capital investment, they actually have to grant money that they receive to Met Council. So Met Council does not have money for capital investment in light rail transit. It is all because CTIB would choose to grant it. Is that how that works?
Madam Chair, Met Council receives funding for its transit development from a number of different sources. I mean, federal funds comprise a large share of funding used for transit development in the region. CTIB contributes to development of transitways. Met Council also has the ability to tax them. I know not everybody has a copy of the report in front of them, but on page 22 in the report, we have capital funding sources, a pie chart, and it shows the mix of funding. And that it's about 10% from CTIB, 35% from federal funding, 22% from regional funds, which includes regional bonds issued by the Met Council. Local funds make up almost 20%, and then state funds make up about 14%. So it's a real mix of funding sources, both federal, state, regional, local.
Any other comments, questions from the committee? I have one other area of interest, noting that the statute says that 50% of capital, of operating funds must be paid by the state. Is there any explanation for why it was decided that, you know, the entities that build the lines aren't required to pay for the complete operating costs? Why is that shared?
Madam Chair, why is the why are the operating expenditures shared between the state and the other entities?
Right. That? Right.
It's a choice that legislature made.
Okay.
It's a policy decision.
Got it. Policy. Okay. Great. Representative Albright, you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just kind of sharing some comments with the Representative Halverson here. I note that some of us, the more privileged among us, have a bound copy of something that looks to be curiously interesting to the membership.
Representative, we handed that out last week. You had one.
I knew I should have thrown up.
You know, these books. Let me just put in a plug. You never want to lose hold of these books.
Well,
you want to take it home with you, bedtime reading.
Madam Chair, Representative and Halverson and I will certainly be apologizing on behalf of our committee for losing our books, and take umbrage if we could find those, and if not, maybe we could find another copy for us.
Representative, I'm sure we can find some for you. So,
Madam Chair, by the way, my name is Jim Nobles.
Mr. Nobles.
I'm the legislative auditor. I didn't introduce myself, and I apologize for being late. I had another meeting I had to go to, but I did really want to come to this because I really wanted to thank you and the members of this committee for taking this issue up. As Ms. Randall said, this is, in our world, kind of an old report, but we think one that still has great relevance, and we see these issues about the Met Council and the governance of transit credibility still out there. And so we really appreciate you taking this issue up, and frankly, I just always enjoy hearing Ms. Randall make this presentation because I think it really speaks to some issues that need greater attention by the legislature. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles, for being here. We do have a couple other questions. I believe it was Albright first, Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Nobles, good morning. I do recognize that other metropolitan areas have kind of an overarching planning commission, if you will, or not. I'm just wondering if there have been any modifications, changes, or as entities are wont to change and morph, what was the genesis, per se, for how we created ours in comparison to other models around the country? And what are other areas of the country doing in comparison to that which we are doing? And if you could just, you know, kind of lay the historical perspective down in terms of where we sit nationally.
Mm-hmm. And Mr. Madam Nobles. Chair, Representative Albright, there is a bit of history of that in the report. Maybe Ms. Randall can refer to that. But, you know, it is an interesting history, and I think it goes to what we have now in terms of the issue about credibility. And that was there were some, I suppose, really wise people back some decades ago who thought that the best way to have regional planning was to get people who were, frankly, not representing a particular part of the area but felt themselves to have a regional perspective. Some metropolitan jurisdictions used existing elected officials and created what were called councils of government, COGS, and that's actually close to one of the recommendations we make, that you basically have the county commissioners become a regional, have a regional structure. It was a decision that was made to not have an elected council, for example, or elected officials on the council. And as Ms. Randall went through in terms of the strengths and weaknesses, there are people who still believe that that is the right approach, that you get less parochialism, that you get more farsightedness from people who don't have to stand for election. And that's why I think we came to recommending a mix, that if indeed there is some value to having appointees by the governor, keep that, but really address this issue of credibility, because I think what we heard a lot, and it goes to a point that was made earlier about things being local, we heard from a lot of mayors and other local elected officials that they had to answer the phone and talk to constituents about the transit service in their area. And no one in the metropolitan area knows who to call at the Metropolitan Council. They don't know who their representative is. And so there is that real disconnect from the local concerns and interests about transit. And that's, again, why we didn't recommend, which some people with regional perspective and believers in the Metropolitan Council model, frankly, wanted probably for us to recommend that we get rid of these local transit authorities. We didn't do that because we see there is value there. So we came to this idea of a mix.
Representative Albright.
Thank you, Mr. Nobles. And maybe to follow on that, in terms of the virtue of Council of Governments, or as you would compare and contrast that which is, you know, resident in, say, the Seattle area or San Francisco or down in the Phoenix area, which has seen in unimaginable growth, or in Texas around the Austin area, which I'm familiar with a little bit in terms of I can't imagine that those systems would not be successful without some type of regional planning just to coordinate all the services. It boggles the mind. And so to the extent, you know, we're sitting here talking about it, I think that we can all agree there is virtue in a regional planning mechanism. I'm just wondering if other states have taken a slightly similar or slightly different approach, and how successful have they been in terms of not to be derogatory, but controlling the pace at which oversight has grown in deference to the growth of the economy and of the communities that they serve.
Mr. Novos.
I'm going to comment, and then Ms. Randall, certainly I'd like to hear what she has to say on this. But one of the things that I think we have to say here is that this was an evaluation of transit. And Ms. Randall mentioned and emphasized that from the beginning we said this is not about the Metropolitan Council, and we're not going to get into that issue, partly because it's a bigger issue than what we took on, because when you start talking about regional planning, regional governance, you're talking about a lot more than transit. And so we were somewhat reluctant to get into the whole issue of how the Metropolitan Council should be restructured, because we were just taking the transit slice. But again, we heard about it so much that we just felt like we couldn't avoid it. Mm-hmm. But if you are going to think, as you are, Representative Albright and others, thinking about how we need to improve the government structure for this metropolitan region, I think you do have to bring in the other services and functions that will be affected. And there are numerous ones beyond just transit. So we think this made sense to restructure the Metropolitan Council for what we heard about transit. But as you think about it more broadly, you may have some other approaches, because you're going to think about parks, you're going to think about planning and development and zoning issues and all kinds of other things.
Officer Randall.
Madam Chair and Representative Albright, we started to look at the structures of other regional governance, like, you know, Metro out in Portland and those types of organizations. And what we realized is it took us about 8 months with a team of three to peel back the onion on the Metropolitan Council in Minneapolis. And we lived here, and, you know, we had all those resources. So we felt like get to really the truth of how things are working in any of these other regions without being able to spend a similar amount of time. That being said, I know in hearings that we did several years ago, there was a similar type of question, and on my desktop back in my office, I have a list of how different states are organized. We looked at a bunch of peer states for transit performance, and so I will share that with the committee here. I'll update it if I need to, and then I'll send it to the chair and committee members so that you can see how the peer regions we included in our transit review, how they are organized regionally. And there's a couple of different models, and the Metropolitan Council here is unique in how it's structured.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Ms. Randall, for that. We'll look forward to that. Representative Halverson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Two things I just wanted to make mention of as a follow-up to this conversation. It's interesting how a conversation about transit so quickly moved to the Met Council, as you said. But one of the things that I did want to, a lens that I wanted to put on this conversation for committee members is just recognizing that this report was issued in 2011, as Ms. Randall highlighted, and think about the ways that our economy has really changed in the last several years. And I will tell you, the transit conversations I'm having in my district this year versus the ones that I had 4 years ago or longer ago are very different, particularly when I talk to employers, because our employment situation has changed so dramatically. And I have many employers in my district that are really looking to transit as a solution to part of their need for their talent search. I'm in a part of the state that is drastically underserved by transit. You look at a map, you don't see a whole lot of bus lines running through my district, but I've got big employers who are saying, We need people with reliable transportation to work. We need reverse commutes from the Twin Cities. And just the way that that has flipped on its head is, to me, remarkable. And I want to be sure that we recognize the fact that the conversation continues to evolve since this was put forward, and I don't want to lose sight of that. I also think Mr. Nobles brought up a really interesting point about how the citizens really don't know how to navigate the Met Council. I had a situation where somebody from outside my district called me with a Met Council question, and I said, have you called your Met Council representative? And they said, I have a Met Council representative. And so we got them in touch, and turned out it was a great situation, and they got their problems solved. But just the fact that the citizens didn't know how to navigate was certainly a hurdle. And I really appreciate us having that conversation and finding out about how we can help citizens navigate this better, because they have a lot to say about how we can improve our communities. So thanks.
Thank you, Representative. And Representative Nash?
Madam Chair, thank you, Mr. Nobles and Ms. Randall. Question for you. This was done in 2011, and obviously not holding you to anything. Have you seen anything substantially change from a findings perspective in the offing of the years between then and now? And I know you're always very busy, and I believe you said you had 9 months worth of peeling onions. Is this planned for a refresh, given how timely the conversation around transit is?
Ms. Randall?
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair and Representative, Representative Nash. Regarding our findings, some things have been addressed. As I mentioned, the suburban transit providers, there's been some consolidation there. My understanding, and I only have heard this very kind of casually in casual conversation, is that some of the distrust has gotten better, and so folks may be working together better now. I don't take that as a reason to not consider changes to governance, because that depends on, you know, personalities in place at the time and not kind of a long structural solution. So I'd say those were the main changes that I know of in terms of addressing our findings. Regarding our refresh, as you know, our projects are selected for us by the Legislative Audit Commission. We're going to be kicking off that process in the next month or so, taking requests and ideas for topics, so we can certainly add a refresh of this to the list. And then it enters the process. We usually have more than 100 topics suggested to us, and our office ends up doing, depending on the year, between 8 and 10. So I always say it's really stiff competition. That's what I tell people when I first go to their agency, and they're really happy to see us. So we can add it to the list, and it can be considered with the others.
And I will let all of you know, in case you don't, that the chair, Representative Runbeck, has been appointed to the Legislative Audit Commission. The new commission will be constituted, we hope, very soon. The chair of the Legislative Audit Commission will be a member of the House. It goes back and forth between the House and Senate every 2 years. So we're really eager to get the new Legislative Audit Commission established, because we really want to get moving on our topic identification and selection process. So,
Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, thank you. Language is an imprecise thing sometimes, and the word distrust jumps out several times. And I'm really desperate for clarity on how do you measure the distrust, or, you know, because it to me it seems tough to quantify. I'm not sure if any other member of the committee has that same question, but what did you do to articulate or identify the mistrust, and how did you measure that, I guess?
Madam Chair, Representative Nash, it's a great question and a fair question. It's not a usual word an auditor uses, right? Because it's not quantifiable in the way numbers are. It was based on, you know, peeling onions for several months, and having, you know, very candid conversations with, you know, any stakeholder we could talk with. And it came up again and again and again and again from all sides. So we kind of triangulated that. You know, we always try to use lots of different pieces of evidence to support a finding. And this was no different. It's just that it was captured in interviews, in conversations, but it was from all sides, you know, oftentimes maybe more confidential conversations, but it was so prevalent that it became something that we couldn't ignore. And we got criticized, you know, for using an imprecise non-auditor word, but it was something based on our experiences, our observations, and really our conviction of that's the best way to represent what was happening at the time between these organizations.
Representative
Nash. Madam Chair, thank you. As a former mayor, I would echo that word, and I would hope that on this committee we can find a way to remove that word in some form or another, because I believe that we owe it to the people that we represent and serve to remove that perception of mistrust in everything that we do. So thank you very much.
Representative Lane.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You did say that this is a report on transit, governance of transit in the Twin Cities. What about doing a whole OLA report on the operation of the Met Council? Because that's what we're really about here, a larger picture. And as Mr. Noble said, we need to attend to the other services that they do and how that plays into this. We may need just a simple, or should I say a huge, report on the entire Met Council operation.
Mr. Nobles?
Madam Chair, Mr. Blaine, it's on the list. I will go back to my office and put it on the list.
Mr. Nobles, I think I found that the key to some of this, getting on the list, is writing a really great proposal. So perhaps we can all work on that, Representative. All right. If there are no other questions.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're going to go on. We do have a bill that we're going to hear today. It is really for informational purposes only. And it is one of several now that have been introduced that talk about maybe adopting some of the proposals, looking at the governance structure, providing for more accountability and connection, I guess. So, Representative Uglem.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, everybody. Happy to be here. Happy to see everyone.
I think maybe we'll have the bill introduced. We don't have to introduce it. Okay, we are just listening, so we don't have to introduce the bill. Representative Uglem.
Madam Chair, yes, this is House File 752, purely informational. I think many of you are familiar with this bill because many of you might be co-sponsors. There's over 35 metro legislators that have signed on to this particular bill. It is for staggered terms of the Met Council. Pretty simple bill. It has broad bipartisan support and really represents a common sense approach to some of the issues that the legislative auditor just talked about. Imagine if this body, the state legislature, turned over completely every election. You would have absolutely no institutional knowledge. You'd have committee chairs and people that would be running the operation with very little experience. And that's what can happen at the Met Council right now. So this bill will provide needed stability and credibility to the Met Council. It's essentially politically neutral, and it is supported by many other organizations. I have with me this morning Patricia Neumann from Metro Cities and Keith Carlson from the Minnesota Intercounty Association that would like to testify.
Ms. Neumann, you want to go first?
Thank you. Madam Chair and members, my name is Patricia Neumann. I'm the Executive Director of Metro Cities, which is an organization that represents cities in the 7-county metropolitan area at both the legislature and the Metropolitan Council. We are unique in the local government community in that we are the singular region-wide entity that does represent cities at the Metropolitan Council. Metro Cities does support House File 752, which provides for staggered terms. Supporting staggered terms is a long-standing policy position for Metro Cities and was reaffirmed as a position of support a couple of years ago when our organization undertook a comprehensive look at our own policies on metropolitan governance. Metro City's view stagger terms as a relatively modest change to the structure of the Metropolitan Council that would help to assure a level of continuity and stability as administrations change and are put into place. The Metropolitan Council is responsible for the very critical function of doing the long-range planning for the region. And with staker terms, this function would be less subject to changing political philosophies. It would add more balance to the council. It would mean less volatility for the region in terms of the long-range planning function that the council provides, while also continuing to allow for some new appointments to the Metropolitan Council at the same time. So, again, it's a long-standing position of support for our organization, and we do support House File 752. Thank you.
Very good. Any questions? Ms. Nauman, in terms of just the expertise level on the council, I mean, is this going to improve that? I mean, you get the feeling that they are very much at arm's length from the issues that they're deciding, and they work, they have other lives, and how much time do they really get to spend? So on the complexity and really understanding in depth what they're voting on and so on, I mean, is there some way this would improve? Going to staggered terms would help that.
Madam Chair, we do believe that it would improve that. When you have new administrations put into place and if you have a complete turnover of Metropolitan Council members, you're then faced with 17 new members who are then having to get completely up to speed on issues. And so having staggered terms certainly would provide that a little more institutional knowledge, more continuity in the process, and would assist with what you're speaking to, and just in terms of not having to have all members get up to speed at the same time on what are very complex issues. And we would argue that these are not all necessarily issues that they're long range. It's a long range planning function. It shouldn't sort of be up and down. There's not a reason for that necessarily. So this would, we believe, provide that important continuity.
Okay. Any other comments, questions? Okay. Thank you, Ms. Nauman. Oh, yes. And now we have Mr. Carlson to testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Intercounty Association that consists of 10 of the greater Minnesota counties and regional centers, and four, more importantly for this bill, four counties here in the metropolitan area that consist of Washington, Dakota, Scott, and Carver County. Our organization has recently taken a position in support of this legislation. We believe that staggered terms are an important reform in providing for the stability and continuity of the organization. I think it's an unfortunate possibility that with the complete turnover of the council every term, that the only institutional memory really resides in the staff, and that puts the organization at risk to have the staff somewhat driving the policy determinations of the organization. I'm sure they take measures to avoid that, but the reality is that absent the institutional memory of the actual policy members, that may be in fact the default position. I think most of the presentation that you previously saw focused on the transit operations in the Twin City metropolitan area, but as Ms. Nauman alluded to, the planning function of the council is a very important factor in both transit as well as traditional transportation via private automobiles and private trucks. The Metropolitan Council has the designated Metropolitan Planning Organization has responsibility to allocate over $100 million of federal dollars each year, and it has a very great influence on where those dollars are allocated. Our member counties, frankly, have been somewhat concerned over these processes for a number of years right now. And providing for a staggered term providing for some continuity in the organization, we think would enhance to some extent the issues that have come to the fore in prior years, and having the council recall those issues as they put together their transportation policy plans and their transportation improvement plan that distribute these federal dollars that I just mentioned. With that, I'll conclude. Be happy to answer any questions.
Okay, Representative Nash.
Madam Chair, excuse me, Representative Uglem, and for either of the testifiers, we heard in the auditor's report the word mistrust. And I'm wondering, do you feel that the staggering of terms could possibly positively affect that mistrust as it relates to how policy decisions are being set or driven? Do you feel that this would, from your member cities or member counties, do you feel that this would improve that?
Representative Uglem. Uglem.
Madam Chair, Representative Nash. Well, as two former mayors, I can say that maybe part of the mistrust is the communication issue. And I also, as mayor, three terms, never met with my Met Council person. Hopefully this will make it a little more accountable. It's a small first step with staggered terms here. I think we probably all agree that some reform needs to be done at the Met Council, and this is really just one of the many options that is before us. But to answer your question directly, I think it could help somewhat. Anything would be an improvement.
Ms. Nauman?
Madam Chair and Representative Nash, when Metro Cities had a task force a few years ago, a lot of the issues that we talked about around staggered terms and other governance changes that we were considering really had to do with increasing communication with local officials, as well as not having, you know, every 4 years a new council that comes in and then sort of completely changes track. And I think that also for local government units creates a lot of tension and angst. So if you have something like staggered terms, I think you do sort of help foster a better sense of communication and understanding and relationship building between the Metropolitan Council and communities.
I know Mr. Carlson brought up the term pretty, you know, very staff-driven or quite staff-driven, and I don't know if anybody at the table has insight into how the decisions are made and just what role the members play. But that, I think, is an interesting, I mean, I think we'd like to know more about that. And if you have any comments, but I mean, it's a tremendous amount of complex information to understand. They need to come up to speed right away. The members that I have ever met, you know, come from the private sector, do not have tremendous background in local government, if I can recollect. And so, you know, the question is really, to what degree are they driving any planning or development at all, I guess, you know, just the role. I don't know if you have any comments on that, but I don't envy being in their position, really. Any comments, Mr. Carlson?
I raised the issue. I'm just saying the institutional arrangement with the cutoff for the entire council occurring at the end of every term really presents an arrangement that the institutional memory of the organization resides in the staff, because there is not necessarily any carryover of any membership of the council from term to term. Whether or not that's operating to affect the policies of the organization, I'll leave it for others, but it is a danger under the current arrangements where the entire council can turn over at the end of every term.
And Representative, last week I think it was, or I guess Ms. Dyson, when she gave us a chronological history of the council, mentioned that the council had staggered terms until 1996, I believe it was, and that the governor at the time thought it made, you know, he wanted there to be somebody that was seen as being where the buck stopped, and that staggered terms maybe didn't accomplish that, which I thought was interesting, but maybe that was just a point in time. Maybe that is not a concern at this point.
Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
I think that was a mistake. And I think time has proven that. And again, this is just one small step. There are a number of bills that are being considered for the reform of the Met Council. I think this one is probably the most palatable in terms of it's politically neutral. It returns the Met Council to where they were before with staggered terms. And I think really upon reflection on all of this, that was a mistake to go the way that it did.
All right. Any other questions, comments? All right.
Madam Chair,
Representative,
I'd just like to sum up. If you've looked at the bill, there is a technical amendment. There's an A1 amendment that I'll be offering just on the reviser made a slight mistake there. So that'll be coming through, and I'm assuming that we'll see the full committee on this.
Right, that's my assumption too. So very good. Thank you to the testifiers, and thanks to Representative Uglum.
Thank you.
And unless we have further discussion here, I don't really see anybody, the subcommittee is adjourned.